Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and in this hour, Crime Stories. Later on, we hear Ronald Reagan on the series Suspense, but right now it's The Whistler, with the episode Delivery Guaranteed, starring Elliot Lewis and Lorene Tuttle, from August 19th, 1946, on CBS.
And now, stay tuned for the mystery program that is unique among all mystery programs. Because even when you know who's guilty, you always receive a startling surprise at the final curtain. In The Whistler.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for The Whistler, rated by independent research, the most popular West Coast program in radio history. The Whistler's strange story, Delivery Guaranteed.
The hot afternoon sun wilted his stiff collar and the sidewalk sizzled under his feet. Dark stains of perspiration blotted his gray Palm Beach suit. But Philip Linden didn't notice the heat. Tomorrow he would be 500 miles away from the city, sitting high in the cool Sierras beside a mountain stream, alone with Kathy, away from everything and everyone. They'd be able to make a fresh start. There wouldn't be that continual bickering, those hours of torture when Kathy threatened to leave him. She couldn't leave him. He wouldn't let her. The next 2 weeks would bring her back to him. Humming softly to himself, Philip turned down a flower-bordered path to the white stucco bungalow and fitted his key into the lock.
Kathy? Kathy? Where are you, Kathy?
In the bedroom.
You packing?
Yes.
Oh, I'll come in and help you. My things won't take long. Gosh, you don't need all this stuff. We're only going to be gone 2 weeks.
I know what I'm doing.
Oh, of course you do, darling.
Please, Philip, stop fawning.
Sorry. Are you going to take this old trunk?
Yes.
But why? It's big enough to hold everything you
own. It's mine, isn't it?
Well, sure, but that's not what I meant.
Please, get out of my way, Philip. I want to pack this evening gown.
Well, there's no hurry. The train doesn't leave until tonight, dear. There's plenty of time.
Hand me that jacket.
Yes, dear.
No, not that one. The one with the sequins.
I'm sorry. Here it is. Do you think you'll need these formal clothes? We're only going to a mountain cabin.
Oh, please, don't be stupid, Philip. I'm not going on your silly little vacation.
What do you mean?
I mean I'm leaving you. For good.
Well, you can't. You promised you'd give me these 2 weeks.
Don't you see it wouldn't make any difference?
But I love you, Kathy. I need you.
I've had 4 years of your kind of love, and that's enough. You never should have married in the first place.
We were happy once. We will be again.
Oh, stop kidding yourself, Philip.
No, you don't mean it. Kathy always said
a woman
that
will say a lot of things when she's 25 and starting to wonder if she's ever going to get a husband.
But you did love me. I know you did.
Oh, that's ridiculous. I'll be a good boy and call the express company to pick up my trunk. I'm leaving for Reno tonight.
Reno?
Oh, please don't be difficult, Philip. You'll see that it's all for the best.
No, Kathy, no. I won't give you a divorce. I won't.
I'm leaving you whether we get a divorce or not. Now get that through your head. I'm leaving you tonight, and I'm not coming back. There's nothing you can do about it.
Please don't say things like that.
Give me my makeup box, Philip.
You can have everything, but don't leave me.
The makeup box, Philip.
Well, if you come to the cabin for 2 weeks, things will work out. You'll see. You're just upset. I don't blame you, dear. It's been so terribly hot today.
I'm ready for this suitcase. Will you lock it?
You've got to listen to reason, Kathy, darling.
Don't touch me, Philip.
What? What do you mean?
Oh, can't you understand? I don't want you near me. I don't ever want to see you again. I never want to hear your sniveling voice again as long as I live.
I won't let you leave me.
Now get away from that door. I want to phone the express company.
I won't let you out of this room.
Get out of my way, Philip. Now get out of my way.
No, I won't let you get out of this room.
Kathy.
I'm sorry I had to slap you. Maybe now you'll stop acting like a baby.
I'd rather see you dead.
Philip, let go of me. Philip, don't you... You're hurting me.
Don't say things like that to me, Kathy.
Please. No, Philip, no. I won't leave you, Philip.
You shouldn't say it.
I'll stay.
You shouldn't. You shouldn't say those things to me, Kathy. You shouldn't say it. You shouldn't say those things. Kathy, are you all right? I didn't hurt you, did I? Well, say something. Kathy, we've got to finish packing for our vacation. You're going with me. You just said you would. I knew you didn't really plan to leave me. Kathy. Kathy. She's dead. Kathy's dead. I've killed her.
Now, back to the Whistler.
Well, Philip, Kathy won't divorce you now. She can't. But she'll never come back to you. And sitting there crying won't bring her back. You didn't mean to kill her, but that won't make any difference to the police. They'll call it murder just the same. So you sit there, your head in your hands, wondering what to do. Wishing you could run away and lose yourself in the quiet green Sierras. Then it comes to you. If you had Kathy's body up in the mountains, you could drop it off a cliff. Tell them she disappeared while she was out hiking. You're standing up now, tense, the blood pounding in your temples. You're thinking now, looking at the trunk still open in the corner of the room.
The trunk? It ought to be easy. I could... No, call the express company first. I'll have to leave tonight. Let's see. Electricians, engineers, express. Here's the number. W-I-2-1-1-1.
Good afternoon, Express Company. Hello? Hello, this is the Express Company. May I help you?
Yes, I want to send a trunk up to a cabin in the Sierras near Silver Pine. Can you get it there all right?
Oh, yes. We guarantee safe delivery anywhere. Your name and address, please.
Philip Linden, L-I-N-D-E-N, at 671 Court Terrace.
We'll send a man over right away, Mr. Linden.
Well, the truck isn't quite packed yet.
Well, it'll be about 20 minutes before a man can get there. Will that give you enough time?
Yes. Yes, I'm sure it will.
Yes, Philip. That will give you plenty of time. You hang up the receiver, take off your coat, and go back into the bedroom. 10 minutes later, it's done. You throw some of Kathy's clothes on top, let the cover down, snap the lock shut, and write out the shipping tag clearly so there can't be any mistake.
Mr. Linden?
Yes?
We're from the express company. You got a trunk you want shipped?
That's right, in here.
Sure is a scorcher, ain't it?
What?
That's really hot. Hottest day we've had this year, I guess.
Oh, yes, yes, I suppose it is.
This the one?
Yes, be careful with it.
Oh, sure, sure. You know our motto, safe delivery guaranteed.
You want us to go collect? Otherwise, we've got to weigh it and come back.
No, no, send it collect.
Okay, where's she go?
She?
The trunk. Where do you want to send?
Oh, the address is on the shipping tag.
Okay, Oh, come on, Steve. Get your end.
Boy, these old trunks are sure heavy.
Yeah. Will you open the door, Mr. Linden?
Yes, of course.
Boy, feel that heat hit you in the face.
Careful, Steve. Don't drop it. Might be something valuable inside.
Well, they're driving away now, Philip, taking Kathy with them. There's nothing more to worry about. You'll catch the 9 o'clock train to the Sierras just as you planned and arrive in time to receive the trunk and pay the collect charges tomorrow. Remember their motto, delivery guaranteed. The door. Someone's at the front door.
What?
Did something go wrong, Philip? Did you slip up somewhere? Did somebody see you through the window? Who sent for the police?
What? What is it, officer?
Well, Phil, don't you recognize me?
What? Oh, Charlie Cooper. What is this, Charlie, a joke?
Didn't Kathy tell you? I'm on the force. I was sworn in the day before yesterday.
Are you serious?
Sure. Let me show you. Here it is. My identification card. Photograph and everything. Of course, I haven't arrested anybody yet, but you'd better watch your step.
What? Oh, yes.
How do you like my uniform?
Oh, it's fine. Fine, Charlie.
Well, you don't seem very glad to see me. Aren't you going to invite me in? You're not afraid of a cop, are you?
No, of course not. Come on inside.
Well, that's more like it. You know, somebody, someday you may be glad to have a policeman for your next door neighbor.
Why do you say that?
Well, I might come in handy, fix up a parking ticket or something like that. Where's Kathy?
Kathy? She's out.
Oh, I thought you two were going off on your vacation tonight. That's why I stopped in to tell you goodbye.
Well, yes. We are leaving. Kathy's gone downtown to do some last-minute shopping. She's meeting me at the depot.
Oh, I'm sorry to have missed her. What time's your train leave?
9 o'clock.
Well, fine. I'm on duty then. I'll drop over and see you all.
No, don't do that.
Why? Don't you want me?
Well, yes, of course, Charlie. Only, I don't want you to get into any trouble. And, well, if you're on duty, would your superiors approve? I mean, you're new on the job and all that?
I guess you're right. The depot's not really on my beat anyway. Say goodbye to Kathy for me, huh?
Yes, I'll do that, Charlie. I'll tell her goodbye for you. And I'm glad you stopped in, Charlie. And it's nice that you got such a good job.
Oh, I'm just an ordinary cop, but I hope to work up. You know, I'm not so dumb. One of these days, I'll stumble onto something big, and then they'll make me a detective. You'll see.
Yes, I'm sure they will, Charlie. I'm sure you'll make a fine detective.
Well, aren't you going to answer the door?
What? Oh, yes, the door. Well, it's probably a salesman. He'll go away.
I'll get it on my way out. I got to run along anyway.
All right.
Mr. Linden in, officer? I'm from the express company.
Yeah, sure. Phil, it's for you.
Okay.
Well, so long, fella. Hope you and Kathy have a swell trip.
Goodbye, Charlie. Did you want to see me?
Yeah, Mr. Linden. That trunk of yours...
What about it?
It's not packed right. We hit a bump on Oak Street, and I think it's coming apart.
What do you mean?
Just like I say, it's coming apart. It ought to be repacked. The weight's distributed all wrong. Then it ought to be roped. I can't be sure to get there this way. Too much risk.
All right. Bring it inside. I'll take care of it later.
Ah, you don't want to go all that trouble yourself. We got expert packers. Only cost you $2 more, and they do a dandy job. Take everything out and put it back in just the way it should be. It's really worth the extra money, believe me.
I want to do it myself. I couldn't... I prefer to do my own packing.
Why, you can trust us. We're all bonded. It's safe to let us pack anything.
I understand, but I want to do this myself. Bring the trunk inside.
Okay, but if it was me on a hot day...
Bring
like
the trunk inside.
Okay, you're the boss.
Joe, he wants the trunk. Here, I'll help you.
All right. Well, please be careful. I wouldn't want any...
Here it is, Mr. Linden. Where do you want it?
Any place.
This is your trunk, isn't it?
Yes, of course.
Well, you better put on a new shipping tag. I don't see the old one. I guess it came off.
All right, I will.
And you really ought to be more careful, Mr. Linden. Here, look here at the end. See there where that corner's cracked? I can get my finger right through the hole. Hey, want me to show you?
No.
Huh?
Never mind.
Oh, well, you see what I mean. You can almost look inside.
Don't bother, gentlemen. I'll take care of it and call you as soon as it's ready.
Yes, Philip, you'll repack the trunk yourself. Wait until the expressmen leave. Ah, they're driving away now. And you're all alone, just you and Kathy. You bend over the trunk, hesitate for a moment, and then stand up sharply.
The key. I don't have the key.
But you can't open the trunk without a key, Philip. You can't repack it. You can't send it to Silver Pine. You've got to find the key. Kathy must have had it, yes. Look in her pocketbook. No, not on the bed. Try the dresser. Which purse did she have, green or brown, blue alligator? Wait a minute. She was wearing a coat. She always carried her keys in the pocket. Where did you put her coat? Philip, where did you put Kathy's coat? You packed it, didn't you? You packed the key inside the trunk. What are you going to do now? Break it open? No, you can't do that. You need the trunk, Philip. You've got to have it. But you could force the lock. Yes. There's a screwdriver in the kitchen. Hurry, Philip. You haven't much time. The express company will close soon. That's it. Slip the screwdriver under the catch. Someone's at the door. You better hide the screwdriver.
Hey, Phil, you still here?
Yes, Charlie. What do you want?
My identification card. Left it on the table. Boy, I'd feel awful silly if I went to work without it the first day.
Yes, I guess you would.
Say, I thought you and Kathy were only going away for 2 weeks.
We were.
We are.
Why?
Well, isn't that an awful big trunk for such a short vacation?
Well, yes, I guess it is. But Kathy insisted on taking it. She always takes twice as much stuff as she needs. Didn't even pack it right either. The express company brought it back.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah. Well, she'll have to repack it. I'll just leave it here until she comes home. Maybe that'll teach her a lesson.
Oh, wait a minute, Phil. You can't do that.
Why not?
Well, you said she wasn't coming home. She was going to meet you at the depot, remember?
Did I?
Yeah.
I guess I forgot. I don't know what's the matter with me. Maybe it's the heat.
You sure are nervous, anyway. You really need this vacation.
Yeah, you're right. Well, Charlie, it was nice of you to drop in. If you'll excuse me, I'll get my bags out. I'm going downtown right away.
Well, what about the trunk?
Oh, I don't think Kathy will need it. She always takes a lot of extra stuff. She won't even miss it. I'll just leave the trunk here. Serve her right.
Oh, you can't do that. She'd never forgive you. You know how women are. She's probably got a lot of important things in there.
Well, Charlie, I really haven't got time to bother with it. I'm not very good at packing.
Come on, I'll help you. I'm an expert packer from way back. Helen says that's why she's married me.
No, Charlie, I don't want to take your time. Don't you have to go on duty?
No, not for a couple of hours. This'll only take 10 minutes. Where's your key?
I don't know. I think Kathy's got it. Yeah, that's right. She took all the luggage keys with her.
Oh. Well, I guess we'll have to let it go then.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks anyway, Charlie.
What's that?
A screwdriver.
What are you carrying that around for?
Well, I was going to pry the trunk open, but I was afraid I'd ruin the lock.
Well, let me take a crack at it.
Oh, let it go. How about a drink, Charlie? It's so warm. There's cold beer in the icebox.
Oh, sorry, Phil. I'm on duty tonight. No alcohol. It's against the rules. Now, let's see how this lock works.
Well, some grape juice. That sounds good, doesn't it? There's some in the kitchen. Come on out.
You go ahead. I want to work on this lock a minute.
But please don't bother. I'll get the grape juice.
Why, this is an old piece of luggage. Hey, how long you had it?
I don't know. Quite a while. It was Kathy's before we were married. Don't worry about it, Charlie. Here, I got something to wet our whistle.
I wish I had a bigger screwdriver.
Here you are, Charlie. Not exactly champagne, but it's cold. Here, take one, Charlie.
Well, I'll be darned. Phil, where's your a couple of saps?
What?
The trunk isn't even locked. See? All you have to do is push this little button and drop the hasp like this. Flip these catches and lift the lid right up.
No!
Holy mackerel, what's the matter with you, Phil?
The tray slipped. My hands were wet, see?
Well, you ought to be more careful. You spilled grape juice all over these clothes. We gotta hurry and get them out. Everything will be stained.
Don't bother, Charlie. I'll do it later, Charlie.
Don't be a sap, Phil. These clothes will be ruined. Here, give me a hand.
Charlie, I didn't mean to do it. It was an accident.
I know. Anybody can drop a tray. Here, get this dress.
Oh, you don't understand. It wasn't my fault.
I know.
No, but I'm trying to tell you.
Take these rugs, will you?
Rugs?
Let's see. What's all this? Sweaters? Socks? Here's a coat. You never saw so much junk. Look at all these things. Just old clothes.
Clothes?
Yeah. Well, don't just stand there. Help me get this stuff out. It's your job, you know.
Is that all there is? Clothes?
Yeah, I just struck bottom. Everything's unpacked.
Nothing but old clothes?
Well, what did you expect to find?
Yes, Philip. It wasn't exactly what you expected, was it? Kathy's gone. You put her in the trunk. You know you did, and now she's gone. Where could she be? It doesn't matter. You're safe for a while. At least Charlie doesn't know what you've done. Of course, it could all be a mistake. They may have brought the wrong trunk back. Then you wouldn't have anything to worry about. Unless they delivered your trunk to another address.
Charlie, this isn't my trunk.
Well, you said it was.
I know, I was wrong. It looks the same. But those aren't Kathy's things, I can tell. That isn't what was packed in the trunk at all.
Well, why didn't you say so before? I got this stuff spread all over the floor.
I'm sorry, I wasn't sure. I'd better go right down to the express company and see them.
Nonsense, it's their mistake. Just call them on the phone and tell them to come and get this one.
Yes, that's a good idea. I hadn't thought of that. I'll call them on the phone.
Go ahead. I'll put these clothes back in.
Thanks, Charlie?
What now?
Maybe they've still got my trunk and they've mixed it up with this one. Maybe they'll deliver it to the wrong place. I ought to try and catch them.
Don't be silly. Use the phone. They'll come back to the office sooner or later. Why are you so worried about an old trunk? It can't be so valuable.
All right, I'll telephone. The number's right here. 1, 2, 1.
Good afternoon, Express Company.
This is Philip Linden. You've got to help me.
Yes, Mr. Linden.
My trunk, I was shipping it to Silver Pine, you remember?
Yes, haven't the men come yet?
Well, they've been here all right, but they brought the trunk back. They said it had to be repacked.
I see. Do you want us to pick it up now?
No. I mean, yes. I mean, it isn't my trunk. They sent back the wrong one.
Oh, that's odd. They don't usually make mistakes. What kind of a trunk was it, Mr. Linden?
It was an old-fashioned wardroom style. It was black with brass fittings.
Just a moment. The truck's driving in now. I'll ask the boys.
All right, thanks.
Have they got your trunk down there, Phil?
I don't know. They're looking for it now. They've got to find it, Charlie. They've got to find it.
Don't get so excited, Phil. It's not a matter of life and death.
Hello, Mr. Linden.
Yes, hello.
Yes, we do have another trunk here that answers that description exactly. They picked up two of them out your way.
Well, that must be mine, then. They got them confused, that's all.
I'm sure it is. Sure. But the shipping tag on this one's been lost. We'll have to check the contents to be absolutely certain.
Don't do that. Besides, it's locked. You can't look in it.
We have master keys here from all the trunk companies. It'll take just a minute.
No trouble. Please, don't trouble.
Oh, it's no trouble at all. Steve, open up that trunk, will you? The man's waiting on the phone. He'll have it open in a moment, sir. Now, for identification purposes, would you please describe some of the contents?
Did they find your trunk, Phil?
Yes, they did. Charlie, there's something I better tell you. They'll know anyway, as soon as they open the trunk. Kathy's dead, Charlie. I killed her.
The Whistler will return in just a moment with the strange ending of tonight's story.
Well, Philip, it's all over now. Charlie made his first arrest, and it was a big one, wasn't it? You knew there was no point in trying any longer. The minute they opened the trunk at the express office, there would be the first terrible moment of discovery. The hue and cry, the police alarms, and you couldn't face it. It was easier to hang up the telephone and tell it all to Charlie calmly and quietly. So Charlie made his first arrest, and he'll probably get a promotion. Of course, he had nothing to do with it, really. It was the express company and that nice girl clerk you talked to on the telephone.
Hello? Hello? Oh, gosh, Steve, he's hung up. Well, what'll I do now?
How should I know?
Well, I don't know either. Nothing like this has ever happened before. Well, think of something.
Don't get so excited, Betty.
He said he didn't want us to open the trunk. You know how people are about their private property. And then he got mad and hung up. Well, he'll probably complain to the boss.
Well, we didn't open it, did we? I found the shipping tag on the bottom. We didn't have to open it.
Yes, but what'll we do?
Send that trunk on up to Silver Pine.
But he got so excited. There must be something valuable in it.
So it's valuable. It's addressed to Silver Pine. That's where he wants it to go. We've got to send it. You know our motto. Delivery guaranteed.
The Whistler, on Tuned to Yesterday from August 19th, 1946 on CBS. You're listening to an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now we turn to the CBS series Suspense for a performance from actor Ronald Reagan. He was already well established at the time of the episode in 1954, having served as guest host on the Lux Video Theater and the Schlitz Playhouse on television and in the movie starring as leading man in The Prisoner of War, and cast alongside Barbara Stanwyck and the Cattle Queen of Montana. In this next broadcast, he's joined by seasoned radio actors Howard McNear, Charles Calvert, and Vic Perrin from March 8, 1954. It's the story Circumstantial Terror.
Autolite and its 98,000 dealers bring you Mr. Ronald Reagan in tonight's presentation of Suspense. Tonight, Autolite presents the story of a man who wanted to apologize for threatening a stranger. And when he got there, the stranger was dead and the police were waiting. It's called Circumstantial Terror. Our star, Mr. Ronald Reagan.
I wasn't the only one who was mad at him. All the other guys felt just about like I did. About Curly Weber, that is. You see, if he hadn't let the pressure go too high, we'd have all been in good shape right now. As it was, the boiler blew up and wrecked the cleaning plant where I worked. The owner collected the insurance money and got out of the business, which left us with no jobs. After a few months of looking around for a job, I was in a pretty bad way. Then I connected. Only trouble was, it wouldn't start for 3 weeks. By now, I was broke, irritable, and mad at the world. So I wasn't what you'd call a pleasant type fellow when I walked into this liquor store for a package of smokes about 11 o'clock one night.
So, what else could I do, Eddie? There I was with egg on my face and that phony salesman telling me I was going to have to take what he gives me or get nothing at all.
What do you have to buy from him for?
His outfit has the distributor tied up. 25% of what I make from his scotch.
I'd like a pack of cigarettes.
Hold your horses, mister. I got another customer. So, I check around town to see if maybe I can get the scotch somewhere else.
How'd you make out?
Go ahead. Take a guess.
Come on, mister. Get off the dime. Just give
What's the matter with you? Ain't you got no manners?
Just give me a pack of cigarettes and stop shooting off your mouth.
Me shooting off my mouth? Look, Buster, I got a pretty good trade right now, so why don't you take your two-bit sale somewhere else? I don't even like the way you look.
Listen, smart guy. I've taken a lot of lip from guys like you in the last few months. One more crack out of you, and I'll smear you all over the joint. Do you hear?
All right, mister. All right. Take it easy. Sam don't mean no harm. That's just the way he talks.
Then let him talk to somebody else like that.
Hey, why don't you give me cigarettes, Sam? We can talk some more after he leaves.
Okay. What kind do you want, mister?
I don't want any kind. I just want you to remember something. Next time you see me, you'd better cross over to the other side of the street. It'll be healthier for you. Remember that. I went back to my room and poured myself a drink. No doubt about it, I'd acted like a fool. But 4 months of being unemployed didn't exactly develop an even temper. It was a half hour before I realized I still hadn't got any cigarettes, and another 15 minutes before I could talk myself into going back to the liquor store to apologize for losing my temper. The street was dark, and the only light on the whole block came from the glowing window of the liquor store. I still wasn't sure what I was going to say to Sam when I got there, but I knew I'd fix everything up all right. I'd gotten to within about 100 feet of the store when I noticed a black, or what seemed to be black, coupe parked in front of the store. Just about the time I noticed it, I heard a shot. It seemed to come from the direction of the store. I stopped for a second. Then a guy rushed out of the store right in front of me, jumped into the car, and before I could do anything, it roared down the darkened street out of sight. I ran to the store and looked in. Nobody around. Then I looked behind the counter. The guy I'd argued with, Sam, was on the deck. I could tell right away that it was a waste of time to check his pulse, but I did it anyway. He was dead, all right. Then I started for the door to call the cops.
Hey, what's going on?
What'd I tell you, Irv?
I saw who did it. He ran out the door as I was coming up the street. Come on.
Grab him, Irv. He did it. That's the guy I was telling you about.
Come on, buddy.
Let go, I tell you. I didn't do it. I saw the guy that did let go.
Hold on to him, Irv. That's the guy Sam had to throw out of the store. He was casing the joint. That's what he was doing.
Let go of him.
Yeah. Hold him good, Irv. I'm going for the cops.
Don't worry. He ain't going nowhere.
As I was getting up to go after the police, these two guys rush in and hold me. I didn't do it, I tell you.
He's lying, officer.
We'll find out if he's lying when the guys from Homicide get here.
I don't even own a gun.
That gun laying by Sam's body is Sam's gun. Looks to me like this guy shot him with his own gun.
If you don't shut your mouth...
Easy, does it?
What happens when the guys from Homicide get here?
You want my honest opinion, mister?
Yeah, sure.
I didn't put the cuffs on you for laughs. I think you've had it, buddy. It's only an opinion, but from what I can see here, what I've gotten from these witnesses, you're nailed, buddy. Nailed good.
And I was. By the time it was presented to the grand jury, the state had a real good case prepared against me. The liquor store owner's gun only had his prints on it, which made it look as if I'd tried a phony holdup and jumped him when he drew it. And there was money scattered all over the store, which made it look as if I'd been surprised before I had a chance to get away. That guy Eddie, who'd been in the store when I had my argument, wouldn't let me up. He pounded nails in my coffin every time he opened his mouth. If I'd had a job when all this happened, that I had trouble giving me a motive. And being broke and unemployed made it look that much worse. As a result, I wasn't surprised when the grand jury came through with an indictment for first-degree murder. As far as I was concerned, it was all over but the hanging.
How are you? You, Frank Thompson?
Right now, I wish I weren't, but I am. Who are you?
I'm Ernest Gibbons. I've been assigned as public defender in your case.
You're wasting your time.
Why? Are you guilty?
No, I'm not.
Well, then I'm not wasting my time. Mind if I sit down?
Go ahead.
Well, I think I got most of the facts straight in my mind. Now, I want you to tell me in your own words what happened.
Did you read the transcript of the inquest?
Yes, I did.
That's all there is to it.
Uh-huh. Well, look, Frank, I'm here to help you if I can. Now, don't make it tough for me. I think we can beat this if you help me.
How?
Well, first, let's forget that story about running in after the storekeeper was shot. Now, nobody believes that.
Would you believe it if I tell it to you again?
Should I?
Yes. Because it's the truth.
Well, can you describe the man you saw running out?
More or less.
Well, what do you mean by more or less?
Well, I got a pretty good look at his face. He had a mustache. But I couldn't tell you how tall he was or how much he weighed. Seemed to me to be just medium all around.
Well, you said at the inquest that he got in a car and he drove it. Now, can you describe the car?
It's a black coupe.
Now, what year?
Don't know.
Well, how about the make?
I couldn't tell. It's too dark.
Mm-hmm. The license number, all or any part of the license number?
None of it. All his lights were out.
In other words, if you wanted to lie, this would be a pretty good way of blaming someone the police couldn't possibly track down, wouldn't it?
I guess so. But I'm not lying.
All right. Now, let's see. The state has set the trial for a week from today.
In a hurry, aren't they?
Well, I guess they figure that they've got you sewed up. The papers have public opinion running pretty high against you. You know, the man left a wife and three little kids.
Well, that's tough. Real tough. It was a couple of days later that Ernie came to me and said they were selecting the jurors who'd hear the case. This was a part of the law I didn't know a thing about, so When he said I had a right to sit in on the selection, I went along, only to get out of the cell for a few hours.
Well, to put it simply, it's more of an interview than anything else. It also gives us a chance to get jurors we think might be more easily swayed to our way of thinking.
I'm to the point where I don't care much one way or another. I just wanted to get out of the cell for a little while. Maybe I'd be better off if I just plead guilty and get it over with.
Oh, now you're talking foolish, boy. There's a lot that can happen in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. It's all going to happen to me.
Some of it might be good, you know.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah, over here, Frank. Sit down, right?
Okay.
I'm going to try to get as many women as I can on the jury. You're a pretty good-looking boy. It helps sometimes.
What about the prosecution? Don't they have anything to say about it?
Well, I doubt if they challenge more than once or twice. Now, they think they have such a strong case, it doesn't matter much to them who's on the jury.
They're right, too, aren't they?
Now, that remains to be seen. Here they come.
Yeah. Right now, I'd trade places with any given one of them.
I don't think you'd get any takers. Not as many women as I'd like to have seen.
Ernie.
What's up, boy?
The guy with the gray suit.
Where?
Over there, next to the dame with the fur coat.
Oh, yeah. Well, what about him?
Don't challenge him.
What?
Don't challenge him. That's the guy.
What guy?
That's the guy that killed the shopkeeper. That's the guy I saw running out of the store that night. Get him on the jury. Don't let him get away. I don't want to die for what he did. It was tough sitting through the selection of the jury, especially when I knew that the prosecution could, for no apparent reason, disqualify the man I'd pointed out to Ernie. If he was the man I'd seen run out of the liquor store the night of the shooting, then he had to be where we could keep tabs on him. Ernie sacrificed a couple of his limited number of peremptory challenges just to make sure the guy came up for selection. When he did, there was no objection on either side, and we had him. Later that afternoon, when Ernie came to my cell, we tried to figure out what we were going to do with him.
Well, now that we've got him, what are we going to do with him?
Well, that's your job to figure out, Ernie. You're the lawyer.
We're no better off now than we were at the beginning. We haven't got a shred of evidence to substantiate your claim.
I saw him. Isn't that enough?
Well, you're on trial, not him.
Well, supposing I get up in court and say he's the man, what would happen?
We'd probably declare it a mistrial and discharge the jury. And go to work on another trial, but you'd stay in jail.
Wouldn't they question him?
Maybe. But it's pretty obvious he'd say you were off your rocker. Remember, Frank, you're the one who's accused. Defending yourself by accusing him just on your say-so is pretty flimsy. Who'd believe it, would you?
Well, couldn't you do it? Couldn't you tell someone?
Proof, Frank. Proof. What can I possibly do but quote you?
What am I going to do?
Just what we're doing. Go through with this trial. Then I'll appeal, no matter what the verdict is, and see if we can rope our friend into making a mistake.
But he'll duck as soon as the trial's over, won't he?
Probably, but at least he'll be around while the trial is on. Now, if you cause a mistrial, he'll be gone a lot faster.
It isn't fair. I know he's the man.
This is a court of law. The burden of proof is on the accuser.
What real proof have they got against me?
They don't have to catch a man in the act of murder to convict him of it. Circumstantial evidence can be strong enough, and in your case, it seems to be.
It's driving me nuts to think that this guy's going to help send me away for a murder he committed.
Yeah, they haven't sensed you yet, boy. Let's see what happens.
And if it does happen?
Maybe we'll have something I can use to ask for a new trial, if we get into trouble.
Where's the trial going to be?
Well, Judge Thurston will preside, I think. Let me see, that'll put it in the City Hall Annex.
Where's that?
In the Annex. That's a small building on the north side of the City Hall. That's next to the parking lot. Why?
Just asking, that's all.
Frank.
Yeah?
Don't try any grandstand plays. Any tangle with the jury might result in a mistrial, and I don't think that's a good idea.
Okay. I won't mess with them.
That's good. Well, yeah, I gotta get going.
Going home?
I guess so.
Tell me something, Ernie.
Sure. Well, what do you want to know?
What are my chances, Ernie? And don't kid me.
I wouldn't kid you, Frank. I don't know right now, but I'd sure be lying if I said they were good.
Thanks. That's what I wanted to know. That's what I liked about Ernie. When you asked for the truth, he gave it to you. After he left, I lay back in my cot and thought about the whole mess. Everything had happened so fast, I really hadn't had time to take stock of my position. Now I did. What I came up with made me want to beat my brains out against the steel bars out of sheer frustration. It wasn't anybody's fault. If you discounted the guy that actually did the killing, I didn't have any beef with the law or the people who were carrying out the law. It was just that they didn't know they were going to convict an innocent man. For hours, I guess I lay there thinking about ways to clear myself. Most of the ways were more daydreaming than anything else. I finally came up with the conclusion that anything I did was going to have to really go from the time I started it. There wouldn't be time for talk or reason. In the morning, I got dressed and ready for the first day of the trial. When I got to the courtroom, I was seated beside Ernie. Then came the time when papers were being shuffled and everyone was getting set for the opening arguments.
Now, then, you take it easy, Frank. We're going to fight real hard.
You know what a backfire is?
You mean like when a car...
No, I mean like when you're caught in a bad brush fire without any water.
Well, I'm not with you, kid. What are you going for?
You light another fire downwind, let it give you a big burn spot to stand in while the main fire goes past.
Now, you explain it to me later, Frank. The judge will be here in a minute or two, and I want to get my paper straightened here. He doesn't like to see an unprepared attorney.
Listen to me, Ernie. I'm in the path of a real big fire right now.
I know you are, boy. I know, but what...
So I got to try a backfire. A guy can get killed in a backfire, but at least you got to take a chance.
But what are you trying to tell me? Now, say it fast, because...
You'll hear from me. Stick with me, Ernie. I'm a pretty good guy, but I'm in real bad trouble. And I'm the only guy that can get me out of it.
What are you going to do?
This.
Get out of
my way. It was the only thing I could do. I couldn't sit by while 12 people tried to make up their minds whether I must die for a murder I didn't commit. As I went out the window, I folded my arms in front of my face to keep from being cut to ribbons with a broken glass. I lit feet first in the parking lot and started running. I didn't know where I was going. All I knew was I had to get away fast. By the time everyone got organized, I'd pretty well lost myself in the alleys of the city. I got to a place where they were putting up an office building and ducked into the sub-basement, crawled into a corner and stayed there. Somewhere around midnight, I slid out and started for the only guy in town I knew wouldn't turn me in as soon as he saw me, Ernie Gibbons. When I got there, his place had a light on in the kitchen, so I went around the back. Hi, Ernie. What? Let me in.
Oh, come on, Harry. What are you doing here? If they find out about this, I'll be disbarred.
I won't stay long.
Wait till I turn the light off. Now, sit right there, Frank. And don't move around too much.
Thanks.
Okay. Tell me why you did it.
I told you this morning in court. This is my backfire. I couldn't just stand around while they made up their minds whether to kill me or let me rot in jail. I didn't do it. I'm going to get the guy that did.
Oh, then they'll really have you.
And they'll have me for something I did, not something I didn't.
Well, why'd you come here?
I need an address.
An address, you mean? The guy with the mustache?
Yeah. Got anything on him?
He isn't around, Frank.
How do you know?
By the time I got through with the mess you left behind, it was pretty late in the day.
What are you talking about?
Just this. We knew he'd duck out as soon as the trial was over. But during the trial, we might have been able to work something. That's why I warned you about causing a mistrial. Well, this afternoon, I went over to the address he'd given. And he moved out a few hours after your break.
Any forwarding
address? Oh, don't be so naive. The man is a murderer. I don't think he knows you saw him running out of the store, but he isn't taking any chances. He's lost, Frank. And you're in a bigger jam than before.
What do I do now?
Oh, yes, you tell me.
I won't give myself
up. Well, that's up to you. You're on your own now.
What's your position in this?
Well, I should turn you in.
But you won't.
Oh, you're a cinch. They have the book thrown at you when they get you.
I gotta think.
Yeah, sure.
Ernie, do something for me, will you?
I might. What is it?
I'm a pretty hungry man. Could you rustle me up some food?
Oh, sure, Frank. I'll fix you some food.
Ernie.
Yes?
What about that witness that claims he saw me casing the place, that Eddie character?
Yeah, well, what about him?
He's the state's number one witness, isn't he?
Well, I guess so.
What's he got against me? Why is he trying so hard to get me?
Well, I think that for the first time in his life, he's somebody, and he's going all out to prove it.
I'm going to see him.
No, no, you're not. You're in enough trouble. Lay off of him.
Give me his address, Ernie.
Well, you're out of your mind.
Give me his address. I want to talk to him.
Oh, but Frank...
I know you've got it. You've got the addresses of all the witnesses. Get it.
Okay. It's here in my briefcase. Hey.
What?
Well, that's funny. I never noticed this before.
Noticed what? What are you mumbling about?
The witness against you lives right over the liquor store where the guy was shot.
Ernie.
Yeah?
Just a thought. But he's the fellow that accused me of casing the shop. Suppose it was the other way around. Suppose he was casing it for our friend with the mustache.
Well, you'd have to prove a connection between the two men, but... So how are you going to do that?
I don't know. I'll figure that out when I get there.
Oh, I can't let you do that, Frank.
Don't try to stop me.
Well, you could get picked up on the way there.
I'll be there in a few minutes.
3 or 4 miles from here.
You're lending me your car.
I am?
Yeah. Give me the keys.
Okay. Here.
So long, Ernie.
I wish I could stop you, but...
Don't try it. I wouldn't want to hurt you.
Oh, well, thank you. So long.
Eddie Wilson, come on, open up.
I don't know any...
But you know me, Eddie.
Thompson!
That's right, Frank Thompson, fall guy.
What do you want from me?
I want to know why you're so anxious to see me burn.
You tried to hold Sam up and killed him, that's why.
You know better than that.
I do? What other reason would I have?
Hold it down to a roar, Eddie. I gotta get some sleep.
Come on in, mister. You with the mustache.
Thompson?
Yeah, that's what Eddie said when he saw me. All right, Eddie, what's this guy doing here?
He's my brother, but it don't mean...
Cozy, huh? One guy in a witness box and one guy in a jury. You really got it made.
Yeah. What are you going to do about it?
Make you tell the truth.
What are you talking about?
Why'd you kill him? Need the money?
Get out of here.
After you write me a confession.
So I can burn instead of you?
That's right.
You're wasting your time.
You know, Eddie?
Get the cops, Eddie! Now!
Get up, you. Am I wasting my time? Am I?
I don't write nothing.
You won't.
Okay. Okay, now.
Start writing.
Here come the cops. You're dead.
No, mister, you are. If the cops get here before you finish writing, I'll kill you. If I'm going to fry for something you did, I'm going to be sure you go with me. Now make up your mind. You want to die right now or take a chance with a jury?
Okay. Give me a pen.
You understand why I sent for the cops, Frank. I didn't want you getting any more trouble.
Oh, sure, that's all right.
Well, how's it feel?
Mighty good. It's a pretty town when you don't have to look at it from behind steel bars.
Yeah. What are you going to do now?
Well, looks like I'll be able to make that job I told you about. Only a few more days to wait.
Where are you be staying?
I don't know.
You got any money?
Enough.
You got any money?
No.
Then it's settled. You'll stay with us until you get on your feet.
Now, Ernie.
You heard me.
Okay. Lend me a quarter.
Sure. What for?
I ought to buy a pack of cigarettes from a machine.
Oh.
presented by Autolite. Tonight's star, Mr. Ronald Reagan.
Congratulations on an excellent performance, Ronald.
Well, thanks, Harlow. Say, what about this $100,000 Autolite family charity drawing? Am I eligible?
Well, if you're over 18, you are.
I'm eligible.
Well, all you do is visit any Autolite family car dealer showroom, print your name and address on a registration form, and have the dealer sign it. And if you're one of the 25 people selected, you can name your favorite church, hospital, or any other local or national recognized charity to share in $100,000.
And all I do is fill out a form? You mean there are no puzzles to solve or anything like that?
That's right, Ronald. Nothing to solve, buy, or try.
And where do I register?
At any of the following showrooms: DeSoto, Hudson, Plymouth, Studebaker, Dodge, Willis, Nash, Packard, Kaiser, or Chrysler.
Sounds like a wonderful opportunity, Harlow.
Thank you, Ronald Reagan. Friends, you can help your favorite recognized charity share in $100,000 just by signing your name and address. So why not sign up tomorrow?
Next week, the story of a cross-country train trip, during which a police officer finds himself torn between his assignment and his personal feelings for the girl in car 32. Our star, Mr. Victor Mature. That's next week on Suspense.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from March 8th, 1954 on CBS. And that wraps up this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.